So, general, we're on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, and let's count up from the bottom of the page: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. If you count 9 lines up from the bottom, you'll see a 2 dots, which starts with Omar Mar. Okay, then. So this part of the Shia is going to be a slight review of what we did last time, but it'll make it easier for us to pick it up. That's always a good idea when you start a Gemara on a particular day, to go back over the last piece that you did before.
Is there another copy?
There should be an art scroll copy of the Gemara if you want. I don't have it here in the room, but it's on the other side of this wall.
Okay.
See, if you have any problem, ask Rabbi Goldschneider, he'll help you find it. So whenever it says Omar Mar, we're referring to something that was quoted earlier. So make a note of that. Omar Mar always means, let's go back and quote, and then reanalyze, revisit, as we call it.
We talked about who that could be. It could be Akiva, it could be, there's a debate about it, could be
Omar Mar. Right, it could be a Mishnah, it could be a Gemara, it could be a Braisa.
So basically it could be a whole lot of things.
Anything, right? Omar Mar. You know, whenever you see Omar Mar, you have to kind of analyze, clue in where is this coming from. In this case that we have, it's very clear because this Omar Mar is quoting our Mishnah, and our Mishnah says that the earliest time for Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis is Mishah Shakohanim Nichnasim Lechel B'Trumasam, which means from the time that the Kohen, who is, if you recall the concept that we wrote about last time, Tvul Yom, meaning he went to the mikvah, now he has to wait until the sun sets, and then he can eat truma. Truma is holy, if you remember we discussed that. And that's what the Gemara says, Michti, let's analyze this. Kohanim, if a Kohen contracted tuma, and then he went to the mikvah, Amos, when? Ka'achli, can he eat truma? In other words, what's the earliest time that he can truma? Mishas tseisa kochavim, from the moment that the stars come out. So the Gemara says, listen, why doesn't the Mishnah just say it explicitly? May Amos Ikorin Shvabi Av Mishas tseisa kochavim. Just mention the stars. Why do you have to give me a roundabout answer in such a convoluted way that you have to tell me about the Kohanim? So here the Gemara employs a very classic Talmudic structure, which is called Milsa Agav Urche Kamashmalan. Those five words will repeat themselves over and over again throughout Shas. Milsa means something. Milsa means something. So like a general pronoun.
Like matter, right? Which one?
A matter. Okay, yeah. A matter. That's good. Agav means by the by, Urche, while he's walking, meaning sometimes you're walking down a road and you take a little turn to see something on the road, on the side of the road. Kamashmalan, he wants to teach us. So he wants to teach us something on the side. That's called agav. Agav means something that's secondary, but once we're there already, you know, you want to learn about it. Like, let's say, for example, you go to a museum and you're studying Indian art in a museum, right? But there's also a special exhibit of African art. So you figure once you're already in the museum and you're studying Indian art, might as well take a little peek at the exhibit of African art. Here, too, once we're already talking about Tseisa Kochavim, I want to teach you something else. Kamashman, I want to teach you Shekhanim Amas Ka'achli. A Kohen, a contracted tumor, when is the earliest time he is considered tar, he's considered pure, and achli, he can eat the truma? Mishas tseisa kochavim. So basically the Gemara is saying that the Mishnah is killing two birds with one stone. By avoiding the use of the term tseisa kochavim, and instead plugging in mishas shakonim nichnosim lechol b'trumasam, the Mishnah now accomplishes two goals for the price of one. It teaches me, number one, when is the earliest time to read Kriyat Shema, and number two, when is the earliest time for the Kohen to eat Truma. And here the Gemara adds three words. Dechapara lo ma'akva. Okay, let's try to understand those three words. These three words come from deep, deep in the world of Tuma Vitara. And there, the law is that you need anyone who's tamei in the process of purification, he needs a kapara. Kapara means a karmon. The word kapara is, although translated literally as an atonement, but it refers to a korban. A korban is a sacrifice that has to be brought in the temple, and the purpose of every single sacrifice in the temple is a kapara. And you might think that we're not going to allow the Kohen, even though he already went to mikvah, and even though it's after Tzeis HaKochavim, the stars have come out, you might say, well, we're going to wait. We're not going to allow him to eat truma. He's got to bring his karban. And until he brings his karban, he's not able to eat truma. He's not allowed to eat truma. And the Mishnah wants to teach us, no, that with Tzeis HaKochavim, when night falls, then he's allowed to eat truma. He doesn't have to wait until after he brings his karban. Everybody have that? You're shaking your head, but I don't know. It doesn't look like, Jackie, you followed me. Do you see the words in the Gemara, de kapar lo ma'akva? See if you can find those words. Because you just got the Gemara there.
In the middle, three lines up.
Yeah.
Okay.
De kapara lo ma'akva. Which means kapara is the same as what, everybody? It's a synonymous term for karma. Lo, it is not ma'akva. It's not indispensable. Now that's a double negative. When you say something is not indispensable. But what it means is it's dispensable. Which means you can do without it. It's not critical. As far as eating truma is concerned, even if the Kohen has not yet brought his karma, he still is considered purified and he can eat the holy, holy truma even though he hasn't yet brought his karma. That's called kapar lo ma'akva. Now how do we know that kapar lo ma'akva? Kiditanya. Okay, now that's a word that you're going to see on every page in Shas. So we got to get it straight. Kiditanya. As it's written in a braita. The word tanya means a braita.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know that the Alter Rebbe, the first Rebbe of Chabad, wrote a famous work called Tanya.
Yeah.
The reason it's called Tanya is because he opens up this book by quoting a brisa. That's why it's called Tanya. But the word Tanya means a brisa. Now, as we discussed in the past, a brisa is Tanaitic literature, means it's literature from the Tanaim, who authored the Mishnais, but not all of the works and the writings of the Tanoim were codified in the Mishnah. That which was left out of the Mishnah is called a Braisa. Now, generally speaking, a Braisa, otherwise known as Tanya, is not on the same level as a Mishnah. A Mishnah is really, official. It's part of the canon. It's gone through all the approval of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the author of the Mishnah. A Braisa was left out of the Mishnah. But nevertheless, a Braisa, keep in mind, is still powerful enough that it would contradict an Amora. An Amora is, you know, someone who lived at the time of the Gemara. So an Amora cannot size up. You know, it's no boxing match if he tries to box against a Braisa, because the Braisa has, in that sense, the status of a Mishnah. It's authored by Tanoim. So an Amora in the Gemara would have to come up with some justification, some reconciliation between his words, his ruling, and that of the Braisa. He cannot contradict the Braisa.
So the reason you're saying there's a hierarchy is because it didn't make it into any of the Sederim and essentially any Masechtot?
Right. In a hierarchy, since it's not incorporated in the Mishnah, it doesn't have the same status. For example, very often the Gemara says that the text of the Braisa is questionable. There are a lot of mistakes that crept into the text.
That's true.
So therefore, the Braisa, insofar as Rabbi Yehuda Nasi omitted it from the Mishnah, it's on a lower status, but it's still greater than the Gemara. And anyone who's alive at the time of the Gemara, let's say, for example, the first Amora was Rav, or his contemporary Rabbi Yochanan, or Reish Lakish, if you've heard any of these names. They could not override a Braisa. On the contrary, the Braisa will contradict them, and they'll have to do some sort of a breakdance in order to figure out how they can reconcile themselves with a Braisa.
So Jack can relate to that.
Yeah. So what's in the Braisa? Now the Braisa begins by interpreting, as it usually does, a pasuk, a verse in the Torah. This verse in the Torah appears in the book of Vayikra, Leviticus, I think it's called in English, and that book is dedicated to the laws of kodshim, of korbanot, and therefore also to the laws of purification, because without purification, there's no korbanot. Somebody who's contaminated, who's tomei, is completely excluded from a korban. And in that section, which we call a parasha, it says, Uva Hashemesh v'toher. When the sun sets, then he becomes tahor. V'toher is the verb of the noun tahor. He becomes purified. And then the pasuk goes on, which you don't see here in your text, I have it in mine. It says, V'achar, and afterwards, Yochal min hakadoshim. He can eat from the holy truma or the korbanot. And what we're going to derive from this pasuk is that biat shimsho me'akvato, what holds him back, what's absolutely indispensable, is sunset. And that's going to be ma'akev, that's going to hold him back, milechol b'truma, from eating the holy truma. So if the sun hasn't set yet, he's not allowed to eat truma. But ein kaparaso makvaso, but the kapar, meaning the carbon, is not ma'akiv, doesn't hold him back. It's not indispensable, but rather he can eat from the truma, milechol, even though he hasn't yet brought his korban. So now the Gemara wants to know the following. The Braisa has quoted a pasuk, and we now have to analyze this pasuk. The pasuk says, "Uva Hashemesh v'toher." Uba Shemesh means that the sun has set. So the Gemara now plays the devil's advocate, as we would say. And the Gemara is going to contend against this interpretation and offer an alternative interpretation. Umimai. Umimai means, how do you know? How do you know that your interpretation is correct? How do you know, Dahai, that this verse, Uva Shemesh, means Bi'at Hashemesh, meaning when the sun sets? And then the next word in the pasuk, in the verse, says, V'toher, V'hai, and this word, V'toher, quote, Toher Yoma. Toher Yoma means the day has, in a sense, left us. Now, what does it mean, Toher Yoma? Toher means when you want to be free of something, so you say Toher. In other words, Toher means the previous status is gone. The word v'toher indicates a transition between, in this case, day and night. So we're saying that uva Hashemesh means the sun has set, v'toher, and now we're ready for a transition. Toher yoma, the yom is gone. Toher means the previous status is completely gone. And that's the way the Braisa understood it, that when the Torah talks about when the Kohen is allowed to eat his kodshim, his holy food, then it means after the sun sets and the day is gone. So now the Gemara is arguing, umimai, how do you know, dahai, that this phrase, uba shemesh, means bias shemesh, vahai v'toyer, and the word v'toyer means tar yoma, that the day has ended. And here we turn to daf beis amud beis. Dilma, maybe I could argue, dilma means perhaps I can offer another interpretation. And when it says Uva Hashemesh, it doesn't mean that the sun set, but rather Bias Orohu. Bias Oro means that the light of the sun has come. It doesn't mean that Bias Hashemesh means that the sun is gone. Maybe it means the light of the sun has come. Now, my friends, if the light of the sun has come, when is that? In any particular 24-hour day, unit of day? In the morning, with dawn. And maybe the sun rises. Maybe the pasuk is not referring to the sun setting, but if I argue, I could convince you perhaps that it means the sun has arisen. All it says in the pasuk is that the sun came. What does it mean the sun came? It means it came and went, or it means it came for the first time and presented itself on the horizon with sunrise. And that's what's called Bias Orohu. Bias Oro means sunrise. Yeah, now what does Vitoher mean? Umay Vitoher. Again, Vitoher seems to indicate some sort of a transition. As we said before, we left a previous state and we entered into a new state.
Is the Shorosh similar to Hor? Like, almost like it's like cleaning the previous thing.
Correct. It's like cleaning up what came before. You know, we're closing shop on what came before. That's Vitoher. Before it was Tomei, now it became Tar. Before it was day, now it became night. But maybe now what we're saying is, with daybreak, Tar Gavra, meaning the person himself becomes Tar. Now, why in the world would we wait until daybreak? Does anybody know why in the process of purification of somebody who's Tomei, daybreak is a very critical moment?
Because it's a hook in the Torah that you have to...
No, it has to... I'm referring to something to do with the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash is not open 24-7 like the SOS next door. The Beit HaMikdash opens for business when?
In the morning.
In the morning with daybreak. So the earliest time for a Tomei to bring his kapara, his karbon, would be with daybreak. So now the Gemara is saying the following. Don't assume that the sun came, meaning the sun set. The sun came, meaning the light of the sun, with daybreak. And now it's a perfect time for the Kohen who was Tomei to bring his kapara, to bring his karbon, because now the Beit HaMikdash is open for business. And maybe what this pasuk is telling me is that until the Kohen brings his kapara, his karbon, he's not taught. So this is a total, upheaval in everything that we've said until now. Until now we're saying that he went to Bikva, he waits till sunset, he hasn't brought his karbon, it doesn't matter. He could eat kodshim, he could eat truma. Now we're saying no, he has to wait till daybreak. Why? Because with daybreak, he could bring his kapara, he could bring his karbon, and up until the point that he brings his karbon, he's not yet tar. So you understand how the Gemara is like playing the devil's advocate over here. Prove, disprove my thesis. I have an alternative thesis. Prove your thesis. Omar Rabba Bar Rav Shiva. Okay, just for the sake of translation here, Rabba Bar means the son of Rav Shila. He's the son of Rav Shila. And he's going to say that this alternative possibility, which the Gemara is arguing about in this Dilma, is not to be accepted. Why? In Cain, if that's what the pasuk is coming to teach me, lema kra, lema means it should have said, kra is always the pasuk, the verse, the pasuk should have been written in the following way, v'yitar, and he will become tahar. In other words, the purification either relates to the day itself, or to the person. And the difference is going to be in Hebrew grammar, that if you're talking about the day itself, you could use the word vitaher. But if you're talking about the person, then the vitaher doesn't make any sense. Vitaher means it will become pure. According to Yopshat, it means he will become pure. And it should have said v'yitar. So it all depends upon vocalization. How do you vocalize? These are what's called nekudot, right? The nekudot tell you how to vocalize a word.
Just part of the Masorah, like...
So correct, so the two ways of reading Vav, Tet, He, Resh. You could read it V'taher, in which case it means it became pure, or you could read it V'yitar, and then what it means is it will become pure, but really it means he will become pure. My V'taher, why does it say it will become pure? Tahir Yoma, meaning the day became pure, meaning the day underwent its transition, and we say bye-bye to the day. And that's when the stars come out at night.
Is this Vit Tahir actually like in Torah Ketav, or is it...
Yeah, okay, yeah, so in the Torah itself it says Vit Tahir.
So they're basically... Is this one of the bases, I know it's a little bit of a tangent, but like for why there need to be like tikkunim between like the different mesavot? Like I know there were like debates about...
All right, you may have other cases, but this case is no debate. Okay. It says v'taher.
Okay.
The Gemara is saying that if it referred to the person, it should have said v'yitar, and he will become pure. Instead, it says it will become pure. The day is considered an object. It's not a subject. So therefore, you could say v'yitar, you could say v'taher, referring to an object, but you would not say v'taher, referring to a person, referring to a human being, you'd say v'yitar.
But didn't, so I guess I'm confused, did the Tanaim actually make the opposite case, that it was translated that way, or am I getting that? Is that not the case?
I don't know. As far as I remember, again, we'll have to see what's coming around the bend, but the Tanaim were not able to reject this argument. This Rabbah Bar Bar Shilo is he has the winning, you know, the winning argument here. We're going to crown him the winner of this match. Kida Omri Inshi, as Inshi means people. Kida Omri, as they say, as people say, meaning he's referring to the idiomatic use of language. People say Iarev Shimsha Ve'idkai Yoma. Iarev is Miloshon Arev. Arev means evening. So the sun reached evening, meaning it set. Ve'idkai Yoma. And the day was purified, meaning the day left us. With sunset, the day left us. Okay then. Now, because I'm very interested in the structure of the Gemara, and that's what we're here for, Masechta Brachos is not my main agenda, because we're not going to learn all of Masechta Brachos. So I'm going to allow myself literary license with your bracha, with your blessing, to skip a little bit. What I want to start with is Omar Mar. Okay then, so if you're counting down from the top of the page, you'll count down about 12 lines. The first word in the line is Yoma, and then you'll see two dots, Omar Mar. Do you have that? And as I've told you in the past, the two dots always indicate the end of a section. And after the two dots comes a new section. And in order to understand what we're analyzing in the new section, we start with Omar Mar. Omar Mar, right? The master said. So we're going back to a previous quote.
So how many lines up?
It's about 12 lines from the top, down from the top. I can't... But you seem to be on Bet Omar Aleph. I don't know why. We're on Bet Omar Bet.
I'm on... Wait, is that...
Yeah. You need Bet Amid Bet, so you're not looking on the right page.
I have all of it right here, and then I'm sure.
The question is whether you photocopied it or not.
No, here it is. That's right. Okay, so.
No, that's not it either. See, as long as it says Me'ematai, you know you're on the wrong page, because that's Bet Amid Aleph. So you're looking for a page that doesn't have Me'ematai on it.
Oh, okay.
There it is. You got it. Yeah, that's going to be it. Now, count down. On your right column, count down about 12 lines and see if you can find the two dots after the word Yoma. Do you have such a thing?
Yeah, I have Yoma right here.
And then two dots, Omar Mar. So that's where we're gonna start now. And as we said before, Omar Mar means we're gonna go back to something that we saw in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah tells us that the earliest time for Kriyat Shema is Misha'ah Shakohanim Nichnasim Lechol B'Trumatam, from the time that the Kohanim enter into the Heter, meaning the permissibility of eating that Tru, because it's after the stars came out. That's called Tzeita Kochavim. And now the Gemara says Ureminhu. Right, so you want to underline that word Ureminhu, because that is a classic word in all of Shas, in all the Gemaras. Ureminhu means, and I'll ask you a contradiction. In other words, I'm going to quote now another text, in this case a Braisa, and that's going to contradict the Mishnah. Now, what do we find in the Braisa? Me'emasai korin et shma v'arvin. When is the earliest time that we could eat, that we could read Kriyat Shema at night? Mi she'ani nichnas lechol pito bamelach. Mi she'ani, from the moment that the poor person comes in during the weekday to eat his bread in salt. You know, if he's not a wealthy person, hi Sam, then he's going to eat what's called pas bamelach. Pas bamelach means bread and salt. It fills your belly. It's not a very balanced diet, but that's what the poor person could afford. Now, what's going on over here? A poor person cannot even afford a candle to light up his table. So what happens is that the earliest time that night begins, when there's still a little bit of light which is called reflected light. You know, the sun dips below the horizon, and there's still light that's reflected on the horizon. And that'll go on for, it depends on where you are in the world. You know, in some countries it can go on for an hour or longer. In here in Israel it'll go on for about 18 minutes. Anyway, there's some light out. So that when does the, you know, you might say, well, you know, if you want to eat dinner, you know, you have to wait till wee into the night, you know, until 7 p.m., 8 p.m., until you want to eat your dinner. But the poor person doesn't have that luxury. He's got to eat his dinner early, otherwise he's sitting in absolute darkness. And basically back in the day, for those people who couldn't afford candles, they would go to sleep as soon as it became dark out. So they would have to eat their dinner right before it became pitch black, pitch dark. And that's the moment when the sun dips below the horizon, but there's still reflected light on the horizon. So that's the very beginning of night. And that's when he will eat his bread. And the Brisa identifies that moment in time, which is before Tzeit HaKochav, before the stars come out, as the time in which you can read Kriyat Shema. So there seems to be some level, some element of contradiction here between the Brisa and the Mishnah. The Mishnah says we have to wait until the Kohanim eat their Truma, which is after the stars come out. And it's actually very dark out. There's no reflected light. The sun is dipped way, way below the horizon. In contrast, the Brisa says you're allowed to recite Kriyat Shema as early as the time that the poor person will eat his bread, which means when there's still light on the horizon. He doesn't have a candle. He doesn't have any artificial light, so he depends totally on the sunlight. And already at that moment, the halacha decides that we can recite Kriyat Shema. Now, what's the latest time for Kriyat Shema? So the Brisa says, Ad until Sha'ah, the hour, Sha'omed li pater mitok sudasa, until the point at which he ends his meal. Now, that's a very short period of time. And imagine, there's still light on the horizon. So let's say he takes a half hour to eat his meal. We'll give him a full half hour. So if sunset is at 6, you know, by 6:30, he's got to finish his Kriyat Shema. Our Mishnah said that you could read Kriyat Shema until the end of the first third of the night. That was the Yashmor Bishona that we spoke about. So the Gemara says, Seifa, the last part of this Brisa that says he has to finish his Kriyat Shema by the time he finishes his meal, Vadai is unquestionably Pliga, it argues Amasnisan. If you remember, we spoke at the very beginning that the word Masnisan is the Aramaic word for Mishnah. So the Mishnah is called Masnisan. Pliga means to argue. So what the Gemara is pointing out is that there's definitely an argument, there is a contradiction here between the Brisa and our Mishnah. The Mishnah gives us a very long period of time to finish Kriyat Shema. Let's say if you divide the night into four Mishmaros, each Mishmaros has 3 hours to it. So let's say the night begins at 7 p.m., you have all the way up till 10 p.m. Or if the night begins at 10 p.m., you have all the way till 1 a.m. And here in the Brisa, the last time you're gonna, you know, as soon as the poor person finishes his meal, which is called his suda, already you have to have finished your Kriyat Shema. Reisha, what about the earliest time for Kriyat Shema? Me, shall we say lema, pliga masnisan? That's also against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah say we have to wait until the Kohen comes in and eats his truma. Presumably that means that when the stars come out, whereas the ani, the poor person, he's going to eat his seuda way earlier than that, when there's still sunlight on the horizon. The Gemara says, no, as far as the earliest time for Kriyat Shema, there's no contradiction, there's no discrepancy between the Brisa and our Mishnah. Why? Ani, Kohen. The Ani that's referred to here in this Brisa is not your Joe, you know, run-of-the-mill poor person, but rather this is a Kohen who's a poor person. And specifically a Kohen who contracted Tumah, and now he wants to eat pas. Pas means his bread. His bread is made of truma. And if his bread is made of truma, then when the Braisa says when the ani goes in to eat his bread, it was referring to truma. That's another way of saying exactly what it says in our Mishnah. It's identical to our Mishnah, that it means the time that the Kohen enters in to eat his truma. Is therefore chad shiurahu. Okay, this will require a little bit of work. The word chad means one, and the word shiura means a time period. Actually, the word shiura means any measurement of time or of space or of volume. So for example, if I'm drinking wine for Kiddush, what's the shiur of yayin? How much volume of wine? The shiur is a revius. Okay, that's a certain, maybe it's 4.1 ounces, whatever it might be. If I ask you what's the shiur of a lulav, so it's got to be 4 tfachim, that's a certain height. If I ask you the shiur of a sukkah, it's got to be a certain width. So the word shiur means any kind of measurement that's halakhically required. Now what is the shiur, what is the halakhic measurement for time? The earliest time at which A, the Kohen could eat his truma, and number two, the earliest time for us to recite Kriyat Shema. And the answer is Chad Shiurahu. There's no discrepancy here between the Mishnah and the Braisa. We're talking about the time that the Kohen, after he was Tovel, waits for the end of the day, meaning till Tzeis HaKochavim, and that's when he could eat his truma, and that's when you could recite Kriyat Shema. So as far as the earliest time for reading Kriyat Shema, there's no contradiction here between the Braisa and the Mishnah. They're all saying the same thing. That's called Chad Shiurahu. Shir means, in this context, the earliest time period that is halachically valid for the reciting of Kriyat Shema. The earliest time period is going to be when the stars come out. And that is identical with the earliest time that a Kohen who's a poor person will eat his truma, if he was Tameh. However, we do have a contradiction between the Braisa and our Mishnah with regard to the latest time for Kriyat Shema. Our Mishnah has a very liberal approach, allowing you as much as 3 hours until you recite Kriyat Shema. The Braisa seems to assume a very smaller amount of period, a very small slice of time, a window of time when he begins his Suda and when he ends his Suda. Let's call it a half hour. I don't know exactly how long it takes him for him to eat his meal. That's what the Gemara says. Now at this point, the Gemara is going to raise another question, again with the word Uriminhu. This Uriminhu is going to be an attack on what we just established called Chad Shiura, that both the Mishnah and the Braisa are referring to the exact identical Shiur as the earliest time for Kriyat Shema, namely with Tzeis HaKochavim. Uriminhu, I'm going to ask you a question from a different Braisa. The Braisa says, "May Emosai Maschilim Likros Kriyat Shema V'Yarvus." When is the earliest time that we can begin to recite Kriyat Shema at night? Misha'ah she'bnei Adam nichnasim lechol pitom. Again, here it says bnei Adam. It means anybody. We're not talking about a Kohen. Nichnasim, they come in at night lechol pitom to eat their bread. Bi'arve Shabbosos on Friday night. Now, on Friday night, we're going to eat our meal a little bit earlier than we normally would eat it during the week. And the reason for that is because we've spent the entire Friday preparing for the meal of Shabbos, and we want to get that meal up and running. Let's get started. Let's not delay. The food is fresh, and the mitzvah is a great mitzvah of eating the Suda Shabbos, so we're going to start that meal early. Relative to the rest of the week, on Friday night, we're going to begin when it's still light out. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim, but the rabbis say that the earliest time for Kriyat Shema is Misha'osh HaKohanim Zaka'im Lechol Bitrumasam. From the time that a Kohen, who was Tameh, he contracted Tumah, And now after his tefillah, he waits until the end of the day, until he's allowed to eat truma. This siman ledavar. And if you want to know when is the earliest time that the kohen is allowed, zakeim means mutarim. Mutarim means they're permitted to eat the truma. Is seita kochavim. It's from the time, the moment that the stars come out. So in one sense, there's good news. The chachamim seem to support our mishnah that the earliest time for kriyat shema is with seita kochavim. However, the bad news is that Rabbi Meir specifically mentions Bnei Adam, so we're not talking about Kohanim, and he's talking about when they start their meal on Friday night, which is much earlier. That's not good news, because the Mishnah clearly states that the earliest time for Kriyat Shema is Tzeita Kochavim, when the stars come out. Now, this itself shouldn't unnerve us, because maybe our Mishnah reflects the opinion of whom? Of the Chachamim, right? The Chachamim say Tzeita Kochavim, and Rabbi Meir is entitled to disagree with the Chachamim. So we don't have to reconcile every Braisa with the Mishnah. Maybe the Braisa itself indicates a controversy on this issue.
Why is he allowed to disagree with that?
Because he's a Tana.
Oh. So
next time you come to my apartment, you have to have a lot of respect, because I live on Rabbi Meir Street. That's a Tana. That's this Tana, Rabbi Meir, that we're learning now. Rabbi Meir, you should know, is one of the most original thinkers in all of Jewish history. And he very often argues against the Chachamim, and it doesn't bother him. He doesn't flinch. If he thinks he's right, he's going to argue against the Chachamim. And it seems to be an indication in some of the holy works that Rabbi Meir was even smarter than the Chachamim, but we have a rule that we rely on the majority opinion, so we're not going to accept Rabbi Meir, but...
Is it Lobach Shemayim He? Is that the rule you're citing?
And I'm not sure if it comes under Lobach Shemayim He. It comes under the rule of Yochid V'Rabim Halacha K'Rabim, that we always rely on the majority rule, even though Rabbi Meir might be smarter than the Chachamim, but The Chachamim weren't able to accept his opinion. And in this case, Rabbi Meir allows you to start Kriyat Shema much earlier, at the time in which people come in on Friday night to eat that meal, when it's still light on the horizon, because everything's prepared, let's go, all systems go. Now the Braisa adds another piece. The Afal Pisha Ein Raya L'Dovar. So first of all, you have to know V'afalpi. Right? What does V'afalpi mean?
Even though,
right? That's a classic. You have to know afalpi means even though. And by the way, even in modern Hebrew, especially in poetic modern Hebrew, they use the phrase afalpi. She'ein raya ledover. Even though there's no proof, I can't absolutely bring a raya. Raya means a proof, a hermetically sealed proof. That I can't prove to you that the time that the day ends is with Tzeita Kochavim. However, Zecher Ledovar, I can give you an illusion, a hint. I can't give you a proof, but here's a hint that what I say is correct. Shenemar, now here we are fast forwarding, we're flying through Tanakh to the book called Nehemiah. And the book of Nehemiah, to a large extent, is about what we call the Ole Bavel. You remember that after the destruction of the first temple, the Jews were dispersed in the exile until two great rabbis came, Ezra and Nehemiah. They were prophets, and they began a process of Aliyah. Unfortunately, there weren't too many Jews that were ready to go on Aliyah at that time. But let's say there were 50,000 Jews, whatever the number is, a fraction. But there was nevertheless a population of Jews. These Jews are called Ole Bavel. In other words, the Jews were in diaspora in Bavel, in Babylonia, and now they came to live in Yerushalayim. Now, the first thing that Nehemiah has them do is he has them build a wall around the city of Yerushalayim. And there are many Jews who are employed in this great task to build the wall.
Eruvin.
What do you say?
Eruvin.
Right. Oh, Eruvin meaning like an Eruv? You mean like on Shabbos? No. This is for protection. This is for security. We have to put up a wall around Yerushalayim. Now, in Nehemiah, the workers declare what their day was like. you know, like today you clock in, what do you call it, you punch a clock. So they said the following, we punched in a clock. V'anachnu osim melacha, v'amelacha, we are dedicated to our work. This is very hard work, physical labor. V'chetziyam machzikim b'ramachim. In other words, we split the Jewish community into two. Half of the community were machzikim b'ramachim, they held the spears. What were they in charge of?
Defense.
Security, right? Defense. They were the backup for defense. And half of us were busy with the malacha, so we're being protected by the other half. Now, when did our day begin? When do we clock in? So it says, me'alot ha-shachar, from daybreak. And when do we clock out? When do we finish our day? Ad tzeit ha-kochavim, until the stars came out. In other words, a person doesn't do work at night. He does work during the day. At what point do they terminate, do they complete their work, and the day ended? What does it say in the verse? Tzeit ha-kochavim. That's undeniable. That's explicit in the pasuk. So you see clearly that day begins with Alot HaShachar and it ends with Tzeit ha-kochavim. So therefore, nighttime, which is past day, only begins after Tzeit ha-kochavim, when the stars come out. And this is a support text for the Chachamim against Rabbi Meir. Because if you remember, Rabbi Meir wanted to start the night earlier when there was still light on the horizon, when we eat our Friday night meal. The Chachamim rejected that. They insisted that we have to wait until the stars come out. And here the story in Nehemiah seems to support the Chachamim that the day workers would end their day with Tzeit ha-kochavim, because the day ends with Tzeit ha-kochavim. The Brisa now adds another piece to this proof, to the support text. The Omer, and the Pasuk itself says further, this is the very next verse, V'hoyu lanu halayla mishmar v'ayom melacha. Meaning at night, we were all up. You know, night is very dangerous because the enemies try to attack us at night. So we were up at night, mishmar. Mishmar means we were doing a watch. A watch meaning a protective security. Like when I was in the army, everything was about who gets mishmar. So there's the first mishmar, the second mishmar. I never saw any action, but we ran around the base with guns. I mean, nobody attacked us, but we did a mishmar. That's what we had to do. So Laila Hoyulana Lemishmar, notice at night we didn't do any work. Vayom Malacha. So we divide up a 24 unit of time as Laila and Yom. Laila is dedicated to what? Everybody, nice. Mishmar. And the Yom is dedicated everybody to what? Malacha. And when did that Yom end in the previous verse that we just read? Tzeit HaKochavim. So we see that Yom ends at the start, when the stars come out. That's the moment of transition between day and night. So we're going to clock out from a day's work, because we are day laborers, at Tzeit HaKochavim. That's the moment of Laila. That's going to be the moment when the Kohanim could come and eat the Truma, and that's going to be the moment which is the earliest time for us to recite Kriyat Shema. The Gemara asks now the following question. My, what does it mean, V'Omer? Whenever you see in the Brisa of the Omer, it means I have to plug up a hole, so to speak. There's some contention, some argument that you could raise against me, and therefore the Omer, I'm going to give you more of a support text. Why did the Brisa feel compelled to quote the second text, namely Vayu Lanu Alayla Mishmar Vayom Malacha? Why would it just be sufficient to say that we do Malacha by day and we end our Malacha at Tzeit HaKochavim? That clearly indicates that the day ends at Tzeit HaKochavim. So the Gemara now explains what was written between the lines, between the first verse and the Omer and the second verse. There was some counter argument. V'chi tema. Oh, I can't begin to tell you how excited I am about the words v'chi tema, because if you learn these two words v'chi tema, you probably learn at least one percentage of the words in Shas. That's just a joke. But anyway, v'chi tema. And if you'll say, if I only brought you the first verse, you would argue against the first verse, and you would say the following. Michi arva shimsha, maybe what it means when it says in the first verse that we finished Amalach at the end of the day, maybe it means Michi arva shimsha. that already when the sun sets, Lailahu, it's already considered Laila. Yeah, but wait a second. You might ask, wait, how can you tell me that it's Laila when it's the sun sets? It says explicitly in the first verse that they continue them aloch until when? Until Tzeisakochavim. So you can't tell me that the Laila begins with Erev Shimsha, with sunset, from sunset to the Kochavim, to the stars coming out. It could be 20 minutes, it could be an hour, it could be 2 hours. In England, for example, or in Helsinki, or a certain place on the earth, it's a long period of time. The answer is the inhu demashchachi umekadmi. What does it mean? The inu means they. That's a pronoun. Always ambiguous. But here in this context means they, the workers. The workers who are building what? The wall around the city of Jerusalem. Demashchachi, they would decide on their own to extend the work even beyond the call of duty. Actually, nightfall is the same as sunset. When the sun sets, they could have really thrown in the towel. They could have, clocked out. But rather, mashkiki, they went into the night, even beyond the beginning of the night, umakadmi, and they would start their work in the morning earlier than the call of duty. You know, maybe this pasuk is boasting about the dedication, the unusual dedication of the Jews who came in Aliyah at the time of Nehemiah, and they volunteered to build a wall around Jerusalem. Maybe they would work into the night. Technically speaking, when the sun set, it was nighttime. They could have checked out. But mashkiki milashon choshek. They went into the darkness of the night. They traversed even beyond the call of duty. Umaktami, and they started their day even earlier. It was even before sunrise. It was alos hashachar, the morning star. Is therefore toshmat, come and listen. Now I'm going to quote to you the second verse. And in the second verse it says, v'hoyu lanu halayla mishmar v'ayom melacha. That at nighttime we were in charge of security, of making the rounds. Mishmar means of guarding the base. And ayom melacha, during the day we did melacha. So it means as long as they were doing work, by definition it was day. And when they were doing mishmar, it was laila. So this pasuk, if you take the two verses in context, you see clearly that Seisak Kochav, when they completed their melacha and they clocked out, was laila. It had to be laila because the pasuk says v'hayolanu laila mishmar, that when the night began, we made the transition from, we took off our working clothes and we put on our army clothes, you know, to do the mishmar. And hayom, and the daytime was dedicated to melacha. So if they completed their melacha at Tzeisak Kochavim, means the day completes at Tzeisak Kochavim, hence we have a support text for the Chachamim against Rabbi Meir, that the earliest time for Kriyat Shema is at night is Tzeisak Kochavim. The Gemara says the following. Now, my friends, we have been learning the Gemara from the beginning of the perek of this chapter in Shas without Rashi. And at this point, I would insist that maybe it's time to look a little bit at Rashi. Now, I don't know how proficient you are at reading Rashi. No,
I'm not proficient reading Rashi.
So let's you know, you have to jump into the cold water at some point. Let's try to do that, and let's look at the first Rashi, and you'll see that the Rashi script is very, very similar to our writing, to our script, and you get familiar with it, and you begin to feel comfortable reading Rashi. So first, on the bold lines, the first line and a half, you see a quote from our Mishnah, word for word. Am I right that in your Gemara that's in bold? Now you may laugh at me, but that's a big deal. This idea that Rashi would be in bold is a very new idea. Like, for example, I like to collect old antique Gemaras. In the antique Gemaras, there's no such thing as bold. This is probably, My guess is this is probably about 50 years old. Not even that.
Not even 19th century.
Yeah. If somebody is in the 60s or the 70s and he learned Gemara when he was a child, he didn't have the advantage of this bold print. The bold print indicates the text itself before Rashi's commentary. So Rashi adds the following commentary. Who could guess, again, if you're not familiar, this question is only for those who are not familiar with the Rashi script. Who can guess what the first word of Rashi is after the bold? You see that word? Are any of those letters clear to you? There's like I'm giving you like an eye test, you know. You remember how in the eye test they show you letters and you have to...
Yeah.
So sometimes you see, you know, the letters are too far away, you can't read them without your glasses. So you could, but you say, wait, I can read the third letter.
Yeah.
What?
No, not bad.
Wait, well, are you on the first Rashi in Mesed? Yeah?
Yeah,
you're just missing.
Okay,
I'm saying one wrong. Is it
Alma? Just first of all, Aaron, you can help me out here. Does Sam have his finger on the plates?
Yes, it's the right.
Okay,
place.
Is there? How many letters are there? First of all, in that first word,
there's four.
Four? Either I'm blind or you're blind. One of us is blind. I count five. You don't see five letters there?
We're at the first Rashi of the whole thing, or
of the whole Masechta. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, Mishosh HaKodim, so that's a quote from the Mishnah, and the first word of Rashi is the word after that. Yes. So I'm just asking how many letters are there in that first word. Let's just make sure.
I've got four letters.
You have four letters. Wow,
yeah. maybe we have a different version.
Mishah.
Oh, wow, look at that. That's not good. This is meant to be in bold, my friend.
Oh, the whole thing.
Write a letter to the editor here. Get your money back.
Come on.
Who is this? Chef Akkarin, my God. You paid good money for it. Holy cow, this is an expensive piece.
Go back to the office, see your local.
You need to answer your money.
Heart's growing.
All this, this is all in bold. And it shouldn't be in Rashi print either. Wow, what a boo-boo.
Totally. Is that a shine sauce?
Anyway, the first word in Rashi is this word here. Okay, well, you weren't supposed to tell me that. I was going to ask you how many letters there are. Now let's see if we can count up the letters. At least we're on the same. This is funny. I mean, somebody's playing games here up in the heavens here. So how many letters are there in the first word of Rashi?
Five.
Okay. Now again, I'm asking my question, but I'm asking you, Aaron, to hold off because you know how to read Rashi script. Am I right? Yeah. So I'm asking for, you know, we have three other gentlemen here who maybe have less experience. The first word in Rashi has five letters. Are there any letters at all that look familiar to you? Out of those five.
Just the first one right here. This is not a test for me. I forgot my reading glasses. I can read the... it's just small enough.
All right.
Out of the five...
You can borrow my reading glasses. I don't know if it'll help you. Here, you want to try it?
Yeah.
Maybe it'll help.
Wait, are they just readers? Are they just reading glasses?
Just reading glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Pure. It's not even bifocals. Yeah. Does it help at all?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, good. I might not get it back.
Yeah, you need it back?
No, it's okay. So again, are those five letters, can you guess one out of the five? Not even one?
Yes, all of them.
The next to the last letter should be a sinj, because it's smaller than all the other letters, am I right? What's the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet, just in size? Yud. Do you see the yud?
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so you're 20% of the way there, that's not bad. I don't know, Zach, you don't seem to be happy here.
I don't even know if I'm on the right page. Are we okay. On the right now?
You are on the right page, but okay. We're looking at this word. Do you mind if I circle it?
It's Bemultai.
Okay, all this is from the Mishnah, so it's bold print. This is the first word of Rashi.
Sorry,
There are five letters. See, I was wondering if you could identify one out of the five.
Lamed, Hey, Nun, Yud, Samech?
Well, you got the Yud, so that's good. That's good news.
Well, okay. Maybe the Samech is actually a mem sof
beat.
Well, the first letter, but let's see, look at the second letter. I think that should be an easy one.
Hey,
excellent. So we're 40% of the way there, right? We have two letters. We have the second letter is a hey.
Nun looks like the third letter.
Excellent. So you have hey, nun, yud.
And then is it a mem sofit?
Excellent. That's a mem sofit. So you have four out of five. You just get the first one, you get the word. No, it's tricky. If it would have had a little piece going up, it would be a lamed. But if you cut off that piece going up, what do you end with?
It's a
chaf. A chaf, correct.
Okay.
So what is that word then? Chaf.
Kohanim?
Kohanim, excellent. So you got it? So the first word in Rashi is the Kohen. Now you might ask, why did Rashi introduce the Kohanim? We all love Kohanim, but why did Rashi stretch his arm out to the Kohanim? The Mishnah doesn't say anything about Kohanim. So the answer is, it says Mishosh HaKohen. Doesn't it say that in the Mishnah? Mishosh HaKohen. Okay. Now Rashi wants to tell you which Kohanim. You know, we're talking about Kohanim who are coming to eat that Truma. Is it any Kohen comes in to eat the Truma? So Rashi wants to whittle it down. He wants to try to describe these Kohanim. Who are these Kohanim? Any Kohen could eat Truma. But that's not the subject of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is talking actually about Kohanim who are not allowed to eat Truma. But at one transitional point, we're going to allow them to eat Truma. Now, why aren't these Kohanim allowed to eat Truma? That's what Rashi is going to answer in the second word. Now, let's see if we can make out any of the letters. How many letters on the second word? There's six? Hello? Yes. If you're not going to join me on this episode, then I'm wasting my time and your time.
Yeah.
Six letters. All right.
That's the letter that always throws me off. I look at Rashi.
Okay, is there any of those? Is there any particular letter or any letters that you identify here of those six? Sam, can you help me on that? Look at the last letter, the very last letter. What does that look like to you?
Vav.
Excellent, a vav. So we're already down one out of six. That's good.
Then
now,
ten.
What else did you see? You see a tet?
Yeah.
Yeah, which letter is a tet?
Third.
Excellent. So the third letter is a tet.
And the nun is the second letter.
Oh, good. You're doing great. You're halfway there.
The mem is the fourth letter.
Excellent. And okay, now you have the first letter and the fifth letter.
Ooh, is the first one an aleph?
No.
Oh.
The fifth one is an aleph. Now, if you could learn the aleph, I can't tell you how to learn the aleph. Because, the only difference between the aleph and the chet, watch this. In the case of a chet, there's an absolute perpendicular, right angle. That's called a chet. If you see a piece that goes beyond that, that's an aleph. So look at Rashi's aleph. That's the fifth letter of the six letters. Do you see that?
Going beyond it upward?
Well, I don't have my glasses on. I'm just going to try to figure it out. Let's see.
I can give them back to you.
You mean it doesn't really... It really doesn't go beyond. You're right. I think Zach is pointing out that Rashi's aleph has like a feather on top. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that feather on top means it's an aleph. If you cut off the feather, then you end up with a chet.
Yeah.
Now, what's the first letter of the sixth word of the six letters? Sam, can you tell me what the first letter is?
Shin.
Excellent. So we have shin, nun, tet, mem, aleph, vav. Shenitmu, correct. Shenitmu. So, which Kohanim are we talking about? Who are coming out to eat the truma? Nitmu, milashon,
tameh.
Correct. They had contracted tuma. So, if you have a Kohen that contracted tuma, and now he wants to make a transition from tuma to tara. So Rashi says.
So those are okay. It's like,
okay. Now,
it's,
how many?
Shin needs like second. I was thinking that
the second. Yeah. So you have to get used to the shin.
Yeah.
And then the next word in Rashi has how many letters? One, two, three, four, five letters. Again, the first letter is what?
Vav.
That we identified. The last letter is what?
Vav.
So we have two vavs at the beginning of the end.
Tet.
Right. And then you have a tet.
Is it a dalet?
Oh no. So that's a little bit confusing. That's a bet. And then we have a lamed. The lamed, you'll notice, is a little bit like a chaf, but has a whole piece that goes all the way up. That's called a lamed.
Very extended, yeah.
Very extended on top. There are a lot of symbolic meanings here, but that's not for us.
Yeah. Okay.
So now, what's the third word in Rashi? Vitavlu. Now, that's a conjugated verb of the noun tvila. Tvila means what?
To
dip into the mikvah. So we're talking about Kohanim who had contracted tumah, vitavlu, and they already went into the mikvah. Okay, then what's going to be the next word? It starts with what?
Vav.
Vav, excellent.
Hey.
Hey, good.
Ayin.
Good.
Resh.
Yeah.
Yud. Bet.
Excellent. Wow. So, hey. Sam, you do have some experience here with Rashi.
Not really.
No?
I don't know.
Okay.
Veheriv.
Veheriv. Now, heriv is a very fancy conjugation, making a noun into a verb.
Like an evening?
Correct. Veheriv means, and it became evening, if you follow. Right. So there's like a process of evening, if there's a verb here. I don't think in English there is such a verb. But veheriv, and what's going to be... Now, what brings evening? Sunset. Correct? So that's the next word in Rashi, Shimshon, which is sunset. Okay. Now the next word I can't see. If I give my glasses, I'll be able to see it for a second. I'll give it right back to you. Oh. Okay. So we have a Vav, Hey, Gimel, Yud, Ayin. How do you read that word? Aaron, how do you read that word? Vihigiu. It does have a vav at the end?
I don't have a vav at the end.
Oh, you're right. I don't have a vav either. Vihigia.
Is that discuss?
Vihigia. Lagia means to arrive.
Oh, okay.
Right, if I'm on the way.
Right,
if I want to tell you I arrived at my destination, yeah. Higati or hu higia.
It's like to go or like, yeah.
No, to arrive.
To arrive?
Yeah.
Now, the next word is a little complicated. Itam.
Yeah.
Itam is taking the word eight, which means their time, and making it possessive. With the mem, makes it possessive. Their time. So their time has arrived. What does that mean, their time has arrived? Time for what? Lechol bitruma. To eat truma, because the kohen was enjoined from eating truma. He couldn't eat the truma. He had to wait until sunset. And with sunset, he gia itam. Their time has come. To eat true. Okay, then that's the first Rashi. So we'll stop here, and I'm going to ask you to go over this Rashi if you can.
Right.
And don't be afraid of the Rashi, because within a matter of a short amount of time, at least, probably no longer than 10 years, you'll get familiar with Rashi.
Rob, I want to check, but the Kohen is, it means that the Kohen is shemered before the sunset.
Correct. He emerges during the day.
Right, because you have to. Okay.
So again, Rabbos, I just want to reiterate the invitation from my lovely wife.